Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hey, please be seated, everyone. Where is Mr. Whitney and Miss Lawrence? There's Mr. Whitney. How are we coming on those exhibits?
Well, Judge, I'm finishing reviewing 2817, and there were multiple things that Mr. Whitney agreed had to come out that hadn't been taken out yet.
It's a bit of a mess right now, still, to be honest.
Well, what's the game plan?
Should we take up something else?
Well, I thought the issue was your expert couldn't be here this afternoon.
Correct. I was just thinking, well, they're trying to get all the exhibits together. I don't know what else we can do in that time. But
well, I can't deal with anything else right now.
Did you bring a book? I don't know how long it's going to take, Judge.
I only need two or three of them to do the rebuttal. I don't have my arms around right now. What two or three are ready? We've got four people scrambling, working on a print in the hallway, getting into missed crawls. We're doing our best.
Tomorrow's Tuesday.
Let me ask our expert one question. Trying to figure out how late he can depart from Vegas this afternoon in case this needs to be shifted to maybe even take an early lunch. I'm just throwing out options here. And bringing him back after an early lunch at 12:30 or something.
Dr. Cochran, what time do you need to leave?
Your Honor, I think I'd need to leave around 2 o'clock. I'm going to call the office and see if maybe I can be a little bit late.
I don't really want to start later than that, because
start later than
well, because you're gonna have questions, and then I'm sure Mr. Hunter's gonna have questions.
Yes. And so if we
start, I don't know, somebody from the defense side.
Sure. If we started at 12:30, I would not have more than 45 minutes of questions. That gets us to 1:15. If they have an equal amount of cross examination, that takes us to 2 o'clock. Just an option.
I mean, I'm reluctant to ask this question, but what if we call him, let's say, at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, ask the jury to be here super early, and we do the rebuttal tomorrow morning. We then instruct the jury closing arguments, and then maybe even let them start deliberating. I mean, I don't know. They might have to start deliberating on Wednesday.
I'll just ask him the question if he's available tomorrow. I'm going to ask that question.
Judge, are you concerned if we start at 12:30 that we won't be...
I want to give this jury as much time as we possibly can to deliberate.
Right.
I would love for them to start deliberating tomorrow as opposed to Wednesday.
Right. So, what's the court's reluctance, I guess, to start the witness at 12:30 so we can get all the exhibits situated? Or 12, even.
My preference is to get him on and off today.
Right.
Strong preference.
Right.
That being said, we are so far down this road, I don't want to do, because of rushing, I don't want to do something that is problematic.
Dr. Corcoran can leave here as late as 2:30, so if we start at 1 o'clock.
Got to be in my car, sir.
And he's not available tomorrow.
Judge,
if we started at 12, will you be ready with your exhibits?
I can confidently say yes, we'll be ready by 12 o'clock.
I believe so, Your Honor.
I'm sorry?
I said I believe so, Your Honor.
Okay. But I also have to deal with the jury instruction issue, because I really want to try to instruct the jury this afternoon, unless you all say that's just, we're doing too much.
I think we would prefer that as well. Have them instructed this afternoon and get through as much as we can.
We would as well, Judge.
Now let me hear from Mr. Altenburg, since this...
I don't think the disagreements and things that we have left on your instructions are that time-consuming. So,
okay. So I'm going to bring the jury back in. I will tell them to get out of here until noon.
Sorry for the trouble.
No, it's the art of the possible.
Yes.
Let's bring in the jury. Okay, please be seated, members of the jury. I want to confirm, while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves. You did no investigation and received no information. Is that all correct? No one approached you about this case. Is that correct? And you've not seen any media about this case. Is that correct? Okay. Let me tell you where we're at. And this is, again, that five-minute issue my wife so much loves. I'm going to send you away to be back, go to lunch, and be back at noon. We're going to finish the evidence this afternoon, and I am going to do everything I can to also give you the jury instructions this afternoon, which means that the closing arguments will not be today, but will be first thing tomorrow morning. When you come back, I'm going to ask, see if you might be able to come in a little bit earlier tomorrow, but I intend on getting the jury the case tomorrow, deliberations to begin tomorrow. So what I'm asking is, when you come back from lunch, are you going to be able to be here at such a time so I can basically start having discussions at 8:30 with the jury? Okay. So basically seeing if we can be here 30 minutes. I don't know. Just let me know if that's going to be a problem. If it's a problem, then we'll do it at 9 o'clock. So just let me know when you come back. Other than that, we are going to keep working today, and we're going to have information to you at noon. So I'm going to send you out, let you go to lunch now, and be back ready to go at noon. Do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do any investigation and receive no information.
All right. Jurors exit. Thank you.
the juries out of our presence. Everyone, please be seated. Is there anything else about the exhibits, or can we pivot at this point to Mrs. Cross?
There's just one, on that one exhibit that I went through, there's just one phrase that Mr. Whitney and I do not agree on, the redaction, and the rest, I believe, we're agreeing. I don't have my highlighted copy.
Can you just put it up?
Well, I need my highlighted copy. Do you have that? It's okay, I'll find it. I found it, Judge. So 2817.
Page 9, please.
And the phrase is in here on several pages, but I think whatever ruling you make will apply. At the top there, Judge, it says, the second paragraph, there are four major areas we're actively working to improve. My issue was the second line, having had knowledge of complaints that allege a lack of oversight and accountability. I just thought that was probably referencing the Hart Institute. It's vague, I get it in general, but that was the one issue.
I am fine, since there's not a specific reference to the Hart Institute, I would leave in oversight and a lack of oversight and accountability.
Okay, that was the only, I think, disagreement on that document. Okay. That's the only one we've been through, Judge, so I have no other comments on the exhibits.
Mr. Altenburg and Mr. Elegant, can I have you both come forward? And let me spotlight you there, Mr. Elegant. I'm pulling up the... who wants to start talking first?
The biggest concern, I think, that I have at this point in time is the confusion over count 14 and the motion that I filed this morning about whether or not... The negligent training count.
And you have now seen my...
I've seen... If it were to be removed, what you did appears to me to be the way to do that, yes. But I was quite... I mean, I put that in there purposefully... But I also knew that you'd ruled against me on the motion to dismiss on those issues. And so I wasn't 100% sure whether you left it in on purpose or whether this was just an oversight. And I didn't want to get carried away on this. But I continue to believe, as I always have, that this tort requires like that the person be outside the course and scope of employment or that there be something exceptional. And all the cases that I showed you under the 766110 statute were in that nature. The federal cases, because the federal government is not liable under a respondeat superior, always have to have something additional by the government, and frequently that's negligent training, which doesn't come into play here. And so, I mean, all that line of cases struck me as meaning that, in fact, the person, if the person is in the course and scope and we are vicariously liable for them, that this does not play in. And, you know, when we get then to the damages, I think we all agree that the negligent training in and of itself doesn't cause impact or damage. What it does is it integrates with an employee who does something that causes injury to Maya Kowalski, which is the false imprisonment, the battery, or the medical negligence. And for the life of me, I think at that point the damages are 100% overlapped. I was concerned that the jury might not fully understand that, so I took the unusual step of actually asking for a nominal damages instruction on this so that they could give a dollar or something if they couldn't figure out what else to do. But I just continue to believe that this count from its inception has been something poorly pled and not legally recognized in Florida. So I still believe that I should be entitled to a directed verdict on this count. But if not, then I'm not quite sure what we do with the instructions. If they insist on having an in, then it gets complicated with scope of employment. Or, I mean, as I've said at the end, push to shove, I'll just have to withdraw this because everybody wants this case to go to conclusion. And I would rather have it resolved first so that it doesn't create reversible error.
Okay, before I forget, let me, Madam Clerk, on the question of directed verdict on the claim of negligent infliction of emotional distress. This is the one that I dealt with on Saturday.
Correct.
The transcript and the court minutes need to reflect that based on the court's rulings with respect to the physical impact requirement and the fact that I've ruled that death by suicide cannot qualify as a physical impact for the negligent infliction of emotional distress. Based on that ruling, that means the court's going to have to grant a directed verdict on the negligent infliction of emotional distress, and I do so at this time. And the lawyers know that I've done that, and we've already oriented our jury instructions in verdict form. I just needed to do that here in open court so that the court minutes and the transcript will reflect that. Okay, going, Mr. Elegant, or actually Mr. Altenburg, was there anything else you wanted me to say as relates to the negligent infliction of emotional distress?
No, Your Honor, I guess I would point out that I have made these arguments in DIN 3396 was the last time I made them, which kind of ironically was entitled a motion to resolve critical jury instruction issues prior to opening statements.
I'm just pretty slow, Mr. Altenburg. Mr. Elegant, on the negligent infliction of emotional distress, anything else you need to say about the plaintiff's position before we move on to negligent training? You're on mute, Mr. Elliott.
Your Honor, I think you summarized it. We exchanged some emails over the weekend that are, I think, Mr. Altenburg and I have discussed filing a set of the, you know, the various instructions with the comments in it at some point so that they're there. But I think, as you accurately recited, given the rulings, we understand the DV.
Now, let's shift gears and talk about the claim of negligent training.
Yes, Your Honor. I think I heard Mr. Altenburg say that it integrates in with the other claims. It's not just medical malpractice, it's some of the others as well, and we don't dispute that. And it may be that there are not additional damages, it will be nominal damages. But we have briefed previously that we don't think this is limited to somebody being outside the scope. If, again, and we've had this discussion before, if the defense either agrees or the court rules that we can still talk about training in the closing, then I think we're probably don't need it as a separate count. But if we're going to face opposition on that, we think it should stay in. If the court decides later on as a matter of law in terms of reviewing it after the fact, assuming the jury even does anything with it, you can always direct it out at that point, but at least we'll have gotten a ruling on it. So those are sort of two alternatives that we would suggest.
Mr. Altenburg.
The only thing I would suggest about their proposal on can they talk about it, then the question becomes, well, I don't disagree they can talk about evidence that's relevant to something that's left. From listening to the discussions this morning, there may be some element of this that relates to a punitive damages claim. I'm not exactly sure how that ties in, but it doesn't really have anything to do with whether someone commits one of the other torts that were vicariously liable for, because they're intentional torts that if Ms. Beatty made a contact that was offensive and not such under intentional tort law, then it doesn't really make much difference about whether she was perfectly trained or not perfectly trained. And the same is true for the false imprisonment. And the medical negligence stuff is a whole different can of worms, because that's supposed to be a professional standard of care. And we're going right now to the jury on negligent training on an ordinary standard of care for a medical facility that is itself deemed to be a healthcare provider. is now under an ordinary standard of care to provide training to another healthcare provider. I don't think that's the law, and I think we're better off getting that count out of there. And again, if there are things that are relevant that are left from this testimony that can be used for the rest of it, I can't object to relevant testimony.
How does this ruling impact, if at all, what we're talking about rebuttal?
You know, Your Honor, I was not in the courtroom when this happened, so it gives me a slight disadvantage, but my impression is we were talking about this in significant part related to negligent training and trying to show that we had accreditation. What I don't honestly know myself is whether that carried over to something that relates to the punitive claim. But the punitive claim really is whether or not the people at the high level, the officers, directors, or crew managers, were so involved in something that they become liable, or whether they were in a posture where they fit into one of those other two categories. And as you point out, it's a kind of a two-edged sword for them, because it has to go up to management to be ratified, or go up to management for them to make a decision on it. And their whole line of theory here is that nothing went up the chain. So I've always kind of listened to this with the same interest that you had, that I'm not sure how it ties into punitive as compared to training, but I'm not going to tell you that I'm 100% convinced that there's not, as you use the word, scintilla of evidence of this that somehow relates to punitive damages.
What about...
Your Honor,
hold on one second, Mr. Elliott. What about Mr. Elliott's, or maybe it was your initial idea of just putting a nominal...
I only did that truthfully as a last resort, because nominal damages are supposed to be for a tort that for which damage is not an essential element, and damage is an essential element for the tort of negligence of any variety. So here there's at least nothing new in the way of damages for this tort compared to the two intentional torts and the medical negligence claims that are the predicates for this. So I'm doing that only because it seemed to me to be the best way to protect the verdict from getting some, now that I know that how much money they want to be seeking, some large number for something that doesn't really have any damages.
Mr. Elliott, anything further?
Yes, Your Honor, a couple brief things. Not correcting something, not training, not correcting, is condoning. It is ratifying. So it is relevant to the punitive damages. And I heard a reference I think this is relevant here. Something about it, you know, not being reported up. Well, wait a minute. Not reporting to the national headquarters is not the issue. They fired the CEO of this hospital for what was going on there. That's high enough up. That's punitive damage liability of the hospital. That's who we're talking about here. The fact that they're owned by somebody else or overseen at some level by somebody higher up, we don't have to get there. Firing the CEO because of how bad this was kind of makes is relevant to the punitive damage case.
I've been warming up to Mr. Altenburn's position on this. I wish I felt as confident as you seem to feel about this claim. And is there any way I can leave the claim in with shifting a question or two, so that if I felt like after the fact I need to DV it or JNOV it, I can. I mean, I want to make sure that the law is correct and the instructions correct.
My concern, and it's kind of for both sides here, is that at the beginning of this trial, the understanding was that we weren't going to shift to somebody outside the scope and course of employment. So they didn't put on any evidence of that. And I didn't raise that anyone was outside the scope and course of their employment, because in good faith, I didn't see any evidence that I could use as the defendant to try to prove my employees were outside the scope and course of employment. So a shift to that has the questions that I put in the motion this morning, where we have to individually say, well, somebody outside scope and course, I I don't think we need or should do that because I don't really think there's any evidence of that in this case. If in fact there's no evidence of damage beyond the underlying torts, I don't see how it can possibly be harmful error to omit this because the damages are going to be the same one way or the other. There's not going to be any harm to the plaintiff done by omission of that. And Mr. Ellicott's made a good point that some of this may still be relevant for punitive. I'm not saying that that's outside the zone here.
And Your Honor, if we could... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Mr. Elliott.
I would say if we can have an understanding or an agreement or a ruling that training can be discussed in closing, I think we're there. And having heard a preview of the closing, it's not a feature. I mean, if there's a reference or two, I mean, I actually missed it. And Ms. Ferrier heard it.
I think she heard it.
So it's not going to be a feature.
I haven't heard that. I didn't have a chance to hear the feature.
But
I guess my inquiry would be, is it relating to punitive damages or is it relating to something else?
I couldn't tell you the context.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
Okay.
What about Mr. Ellicott's, if there's some sort of understanding? I made so many calls in this case,
and
I think this is pretty much my last call.
I'm essentially conceding to you that I think there's a level of this that could be talked about for punitive damages, and you know, whether Mr. Anderson will go farther than that line, I don't know, but there certainly is a line there that he can go to. So,
I think I need to ask Mr. Anderson to make sure I'm not giving away something. He's comfortable with what we've talked about.
This much I know for certain. There is a plan behind everything the defense does. And because of that, I would like for it to go to the jury and for the court to then consider these matters on JNOP. If we have to ask an additional question, we're not opposed to that. But as to the cause of action, we would prefer for it to go to the jury. And the court hasn't heard the conclusion yet of one of our witnesses.
My evil plan is simply not to have one more claim on the verdict form and to have to deal with it in closing arguments, Your Honor.
I mean, Mr. Anderson, I hear you want it to go, but like I said, I'm starting to really warm to Mr. Altenburn's position that it might be legally incorrect to let it go to the jury. That the negligent training has to be outside the scope.
Isn't that an issue for the jury?
Well, we don't have a jury finding currently itemized on the verdict form, and based on how this has been developing over the last 9 weeks, you know, it's not something that really we've been focused on.
I would remind Mr. Anderson that if they're outside the scope for count 14C, then they're outside the scope for false imprisonment and battery, and that impacts his punitive claim itself.
My concern is I do not want to hear from the defense after the court rules some argument that somehow our punitive damage claim is inadequate or we failed to preserve some issue. And sure as sure, we're going to get that from them. That's why unless simply submitting it is reversible error, in other words, if the court afterwards determines on JNOV to take it out, I don't see the problem with submitting it and getting their view.
Except it allows for a chunk of argument on things that probably should never have come in. I mean, the problem with if there is, as he says, a strategy, but I've been worried about trying to sort out the negligent things that the jury has heard about compared to the things that were extreme and outrageous conduct with intent.
And I guess, and this is going to sound pretty callous, I don't really care what your all's arguments are.
Good.
it's a question of what I legally have to do.
Right.
And that's... I just wish I was over the finish line on this issue that you where you seem to be, Mr. Alton Bryant. I'm just not quite there yet. I'm pretty close. I've warmed to the idea that you might be correct on it, but I'm just not over the finish line on it. And so that's my hesitation.
But your hesitation is on it as a legal issue as compared to the evidence that's going to the jury. So, I mean, it's not like the directed verdict is dependent upon whether there's evidence on this or not. It's whether this claim can be made by someone when there's absolutely no dispute that it's going to be 100% covered by the employer because the employer is vicariously liable. And that's, you know, the cases that they've cited to us just don't fit that. And the little case law under 766.110 doesn't seem to fit that.
Well, and I guess my concern is, let's say there's a finding of no liability on false imprisonment, battery, medical negligence, and then there's a finding of liability on negligent training.
So how could that be? Your current instruction says that cannot be.
And that's...
Right?
If your argument... and your position is legally correct, then how can that be? I think
right.
That's the appropriate
right.
question.
And on the and that's how you have it currently on the verdict form that you submitted to us last night. They can't answer the questions on negligent training unless they answered yes to one of those questions at least.
Mr. Elegant, I'll give you one last chance. I am... Like I said, I'm more in Mr. Altenburn's camp on this issue than I am in your camp. So,
Your Honor, you've heard Mr. Anderson's concerns, and I don't know that I have anything to add. I mean, again, I think part of the problem could be addressed as long as, you know, he's not going to be interrupted when he starts talking about training because it is relevant.
If it is wrapped at some point into the Med-Mal, which is what I thought we were going to do about 2 months ago with this. But as long as it's wrapped in so that my concern is not fulfilled, then I understand the need to streamline. And, of course, the law.
I'm not quite sure how it's wrapped in at this point to the Med-Mal. We've got those instructions are kind of what they are.
Is there any question, Mr. Altenburn, that we could ask that lets me basically punt on this issue?
Judge, it's a question of law. It's not a question we can ask the jury. I'm sorry. I wish it were.
Mr. Elliott, any other question that I can punt on this issue?
No, I think the concern, one of the concerns I heard earlier was, well, you'd have to have Med-Mal to answer this question on the medical malpractice part. I think you could add a line that says that. You could say, well, let's put it this way. Yes, I think you could answer a question that you could add a question that says, you know, if you find to find that the training was inadequate for a healthcare provider, you would need to answer to do the analysis you did above for the medical malpractice claim.
I mean, they're already going to be able to argue that whoever breaches the standard of care on diagnosis and treatment did so because they weren't adequately trained or because they fell below the standard of care. That all fits together in that package. I mean, but it's the standard question in this situation about these doctors and whether or not they deviated from the medical standard of care in treatment or diagnosis. And it all it doesn't create another spare question.
I think I just heard what we've been asking about, which is that we can talk about this may have happened because of a lack of training. If I was wrong, I apologize. But if I heard that, I think that may satisfy Mr. Anderson.
And can we hear the end of Dr. Corcoran's testimony before we make any finals?
Well, I guess the answer is yes, but all this has to get printed. All this has to, it's going to take a while to make that happen. And so I'll be having the jury sitting, cooling their jets even more.
Talking about this afternoon with jury instructions.
Right, because, I mean, I got to print them out. And it's, you know, I've got 11 or 12 jurors, depending on how we deal with the juror disqualification issue, plus all of y'all, the court reporter and me. And we're talking, what, close to 75, 80 pages per?
Okay. It's wild.
Mr. Elliott, I guess I've always kind of, I won't say that this has been a throwaway count, but it just kind of seems duplicative of the other counts. And I think at this point, even though I'm not fully on board with Mr. Altenburn, I'm more on his side on this one, and it just seems like it's cleaner to not have the negligent training questions in there. I think from a percentage odd standpoint of me being wrong, I've got less of a chance of being wrong on that than if I leave the questions in.
I understand, Your Honor, and I think, again, our concern, including Mr. Anderson's, and I think we heard it would be okay. As long as he can talk about training, and again, it won't be a feature of the closing, but as long as you talk about training in the closing, and it is relevant to several issues, then I think, you know.
I don't want to be foreclosed about arguments over management.
Now, Mr. Shapiro, was that shrug meaningful to this discussion, or?
Not particularly, Your Honor, honestly. It's, just to be honest, it's not a feature of my closing either.
Well, this is where I'm at. I think I'm going to remove the negligent training question. But I've heard some discussions, and I do agree that the question of training does go to the other tort counts that are existing. So I think we're really talking a lot about something that's not going to become an issue or should be an issue. Certainly, it also goes to the punitive damages. So I think I've got a greater chance of being correct by not asking the negligent training questions and removing that from the verdict form. So I'm going to say let's go with the version of the instructions and verdict form that I circulated this morning. And now, knowing that that's the version I'm going with, have you all had any chance to see if I've messed up the cross-references any?
Well, I've confessed that I've read this document so many times in the last 3 months that it's hard to proofread, but I didn't see anything that was a mess-up on it. But the only other thing that I'm still a little concerned about, especially after I saw the calculations, which seem to be mathematically correct, is that they're lump sum for all non-economic damages, which, when we get to non-duplication with the concept the pain and suffering must be for this tort, it's going to make it even harder for the jury. And so I know that you think your non-duplication instruction is adequate, but I think it's going to be tested by the closing argument. I wish it were a little stronger. I proposed something, but you didn't get it.
So. There's so much that's been tested in this case, Mr. Oliver. Just one more issue.
It's a veritable fertile field, isn't it?
Okay. What I would ask is the, and I don't know if it's Ms. Ferrier and somebody else in your office, Mr. Altenburg, to go back and fly spec
this,
especially the cross references. I'm going to start having printing of the verdict form and the jury instructions. And if we have to throw those away and change them, yeah. I've wasted some paper. But from a timing perspective, if I can not have the jury continue to wait on me, then...
And on that verdict form, that, well, I guess all of the negligent training is out. So the one question we were uncertain about is gone. Okay, yes.
And I mean, I'm not saying that you and Mr. Elegant shouldn't look at it, but...
No, fresh eyes would be a good
fresh
idea.
Fresh eyes. And honestly, I think I'm probably in the same boat that you are. That, I mean, if I had 4 days to put this aside and come back to it,
right,
I would do that. But since we don't even have 4 hours, I'm not sure I'm in that position.
Okay.
So. Okay. Anything else that we can do before noon, or I should let you all take your time, finish out these exhibits, and be ready to go at noon.
Your Honor, what time did you want to talk about the juror issue?
Can we just do that after we send the jury home today? Is that
yes.
problematic for anybody?
No.
So defense, you're okay with just waiting until...
That's fine, Judge.
Okay. Let's do that after. Let's take that one off the table until we get this rebuttal case nailed down.
Can we come back at 10 till, just in case Ms. Crawls has any further requests for minor redactions?
That's fine. 10 till. Now, one other thing, and it probably doesn't matter since you have a lot of technology, but I was going to give the lawyers a copy. Sometimes the lawyers want them stapled, not stapled. Sometimes they want it two-sided. Sometimes they want one-sided. Is there any specific request on how you want your paper copy of the jury instructions and verdict form?
You know, we like the stapler. One-sided or two-sided is up to the court.
I don't care about the stapler. It's just the TV, doing it right in front of the microphone.
I know. We'd appreciate a staple.
Staple, then, if we could, just one side.
One side.
It's a thick document, one-sided, but it can be done.
Staple two for me.
Do you want yours both sides?
I'm a big pine tree saver, too.
Okay. So, does that go for your entire team or just you?
I think Ms. Crowell is partial to one side.
Okay. And, Madam Court Reporter, I'm going to get you a copy. Do you want yours one-sided or two-sided?
One-sided.
One? No. Okay. And, Mr. Elegant, your team there in Tampa?
Your Honor, we'll just pick it up from when they come out off the, we'll print one
Okay. Here.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, let's be back here at 11:50, and then Okay. We're going to rock and roll. Please be seated. Mr. Shapiro, you seem to have lost a couple of folks.
Big enough to carry the weight, apparently. But they should be back right away, Your Honor. They are. I think Ms. Crowles is just working on one last set of exhibits with Ms. Lawrence.
So are we otherwise clear besides that one last exhibit?
There is I don't know if Mr. Shapiro wants to address this. There is one issue that I know Ms. Crowles has with these exhibits.
Mr. Whitney. I think she would need to address it. I'm not familiar with the issues.
Your Honor, maybe to be efficient, Ms. Ferrier found a couple of things that need to be renumbered on the verdict form.
She email that around?
I will. Yes, Your Honor. She sent it to me, and I'll send it on. So, yes.
It's just on the verdict form as opposed to the instructions?
Yes. I don't think the instructions route people to other... The instructions just go linear.
That's correct, except for in the wrongful death survivor claims, there's a couple of cross-references.
Okay, we'll look at
on claim numbers, but I hope I got those.
Oh, okay. Let me send this.
This causes primary this, but I really don't think this requires her to weigh in. It requires the court to tell us what to do. Okay.
What exhibit number and what page are we talking about?
2819A. I can hand it to the court. 2819A003. The defense's issue with this, Your Honor, is that there's highlighting that's embedded in here. The reason being, I received the paper on Friday evening, and as I was thinking through questions, I highlighted some things. We're not able to cure that at the moment, so either they go back to the jury like that, or perhaps the defense can send us these pages for Ms. Green this evening, and we can send back to the jury without the highlight.
Okay.
Oh, you told us okay?
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay. Never mind.
All right. So the highlighter gates is over before it even began. And so Ms. Croyles is reviewing the last exhibit.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, and I don't know, Mr. Shapiro, if you're able to. Ms. Croyles earlier today said that there was one defense exhibit she wanted. Yeah. Are you able to pinch hit for her?
Yeah.
Since we've got 6 minutes.
Not accurately, we'll be wherever, if you don't mind.
Well, I want her to finish whatever she's doing, so.
Okay. I can ask permission.
Your Honor, while we're in a lull, when we're done with this, the jury's going to come back and there's going to be the rebuttal case, right? So I guess I'm trying to figure out, I won't be needed till late in the day? Later in the day.
I mean, I'm going to be giving the jury instructions. I see you sent around two cross-references that have to be changed. Hopefully.
In the verdict form, yes.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if you are coming back later on this afternoon or not. I don't know. That's up to you and your team.
I can come whenever I need it. I don't think I need to be present for the rebuttal case. I was going to go ahead and sign off now, and then maybe Samantha or somebody can let me know when it's time to come back.
I think they heard you.
Right. I'll text you.
Okay. Thanks, Nick. All right. We'll see everybody later. Thank you.
Mr. Shapiro.
Sure. There was two exhibits that were discussed with Ms. Deedy during her direct and cross-examination. Clay, you pull up 3217-0722. This is with regard to the birthday card that there's some dispute over whether it was delivered.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? It's fine. It's part of the group.
718 through 722, if you want to start at 718. Or, and just scroll for the court's basis, 718 through 722.
Through what?
722. This is all about the delivery of the birthday card.
Didn't we already have something like this?
I thought it was admitted into evidence without objection. Ms. Corrales tells me it wasn't.
Madam Clerk, is Exhibit 3217, pages, is it 718 through 722 in?
Not that portion.
I had the same recollection as Your Honor. Ms. Corrales told me it wasn't formally admitted.
Well, the clerk's telling me it's not in, so.
Did she testify to this?
Yeah, we would have an objection to Ms. Beattie's email to Wendy Kowalski claiming that. Well, whatever she claims.
Hearsay.
It'll be hearsay.
I believe she testified to this. It also goes to her action plan, not to the truth of the matter. So. Well,
still hearsay.
Well, it would be used for the truth of the matter because they're trying to put this on DCF. So we object to that page. As for the email with the birthday card on 721, we don't have a...
This one?
No. We don't have an objection to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the one. Yeah. Okay.
Anything else, though?
No, Your Honor. This was discussed. I thought we had moved into evidence. We had verified all of this with Ms. Beattie. We would ask this to be admitted.
What was the first page that we're seeking to admit?
722 is the... last email. They're in sequence between 718 through 722, and 722 is the email.
So what you're asking for starting with 718?
Yes, yeah, I don't think they have an objection for 718 through 721, correct, Mr. Rule?
If I could see 1920 again.
They're just the scans of the birthday cards.
Yeah, no, yes, yeah, right. We have no objection to 18 through 21. We object to 22.
Okay, the court's going to receive Exhibit 3217, pages 718 through 721. I'm going to exclude 722 on hearsay grounds.
Well, do we want to withdraw?
Anything else?
Okay, that's fine. Nothing, Your Honor. Thank you.
And did we get that last exhibit that you were working on, Ms. Crowell's, with... the plaintiff's team?
We've discussed the redactions. I can proceed without it. If it happens to be handed to me in the middle, I'll address it. But we can move forward.
Judge, the only issue with the exhibits, and it can be corrected before it goes back to the jury, doesn't need to be corrected before it's shown to the jury, as they have highlighting.
I think your colleague just said
it. Oh, you already talked about it? I'm behind the times, over. Judge.
There apparently is no highlighting gate going on, so...
Okay. I defer.
Anything else before we bring in this jury?
Not for plaintiff's owner.
Defense, anything else before we bring in the jury?
Don't believe so, Your Honor.
Let's bring in the jury.
Yes, sir.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.
America's Social Casino.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Out at McDonald's, te puedes llevar un $5 McChicken meal deal o un $6 McDouble meal deal. Así, hay algo para todos. Llévate más por tu dinero con tu meal deal. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spend on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.